John P. from San Diego. Evening, everybody. John Petz, alcoholic. I would just like to take a minute to honor the man who sponsored me for 18 years, who passed away on Friday, Jimmy Taylor. His memorial will be this Friday at 2 p.m. at, I don't know the church. There are people in the room who do know, so if you just try to track him down, I'm sure everybody would be welcome. And if everybody could just give a moment of silence for Jimmy in honor of him. Thank you. All right. I am alcoholic. There is no doubt about that. I'd like to thank Larry for asking me to talk. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to be asked to speak in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have anything special to say. I don't have any wisdom. I have a little bit of experience. I've been here a few 24 hours. But the reality is that, you know, I've had that spiritual awakening, that personality change of a bare minimum nature, just sufficient to bring about sobriety for me today. And one day at a time since my sobriety date of January 31st of 1985. Just sufficient. And trust me, there are good days and there are bad days, and there are just days in sobriety. I'd like to welcome our newcomers. I'm sure that you walk into this room and everybody's laughing and having a good time and they're welcoming you, and you're just going, leave me alone! That's what I was like. I had no intention of getting sober when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted to get the heat off. My story is really pathetic. My first wife got really mad at me and ratted me out to my mother. I didn't spend any time in prison. I never got a DUI. I did a lot of lying, cheating, and stealing. Should have spent time in prison. Should have had a lot of DUIs, but, you know, that just wasn't part of my story. My story is really rather pathetic. So, you know, if you're here and you're new, I want to welcome you. You are in a room of where you can come and you can be, and we have a solution for your problem. And you probably think your problem has something to do with alcohol. And that's exactly what I thought when I got here into these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've come to learn that really my problem is sobriety. My problem is that I am incapable of getting through the day without a drink. Incapable. I need a drink in order to be able to get through the day. I'm restless and irritable and discontented. I have this spring in my gut that just tightens down and 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 tightens down. And I take a drink and I go, that is what makes me alcoholic. Because it's the effect produced by alcohol on me. I drink solely and exclusively for the effect produced by alcohol. I need that instant relief that comes with a few drinks. You know, so I don't care how much you spilled. I don't care how little you spilled. I don't care how little you drank or how much you drank. I don't care what condiments you added to your alcohol. If you can relate to the idea that being sober is what drives you nuts, and your solution is alcohol, you're in the right place. And we have a solution for you. We have a solution that works on a long time basis. A guy like me could not stay sober on his own, and I tried all those things in Chapter 3. Well, wait a minute, I didn't go to sanitariums yet. But you know, I took a solemn oath. I promised. I wrote contracts. I did everything. And I could not put a day together. Not a day. I would get up in the morning and I would swear that today was going to be different. And by 10 o'clock in the morning, that solemn oath had been violated one more time. This program of Alcoholics Anonymous is kind of interesting. When I got here, we had a lot of slogans up around the walls, you know, let go and let God, first things first, think, you know, those sorts of slogans. And for an alcoholic of my type, I want to give you newcomers some warnings, okay? You're going to be in the rooms, and you're going to hear somebody say, I got an idea. When that happens, run. Whatever you do, get as far away from that person as you can. Because an alcoholic with an idea is in trouble. You know, my book tells me that my illness, my spiritual malady, centers in my mind. That's where the problem is. And telling me to think is like, you know, well, I don't do mechanical tools and things like that. They're dangerous weapons in my hands. That's like, you know, putting a dangerous weapon in my hands, asking me to think. You know, the slogans aren't around as much anymore. And as far as first things first are concerned, I didn't know which way was up. How was I supposed to know what was first? You know, and you know, I don't know that it's that much different today. You know, I want to share an interesting experience with you, just so you don't think that your speaker, despite having a few days of sobriety, has gotten well. My beautiful bride comes home from work today, and she's telling me a little bit about her day. And there's this coworker of hers who is causing some conflict. And my first thought is to go kill him. I mean, I'm dead serious. Is to commit homicide. That's my first thought. He doesn't deserve to breathe anymore. Now, you know, well-adjusted people don't respond like that. I'm really sorry. They just don't. You know, they sit back. They relax. They do what the book says. They pause. When agitated, and ask for the right thought and the right thing to do, and then they generally do it. Not me. You know, I got all kinds of ideas. I mean, I've got this guy drawn and quartered, castrated, flayed, eviscerated, all in the span of about 5 seconds. That's your speaker tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, the good news is you don't have to get well right away. Thank God. Thank God. The bad news is we are your new friends. So, no, and seriously, I mean, this is a program, this is a solution, it's a program of action. There's some things I'm going to talk about that I've done that have allowed me to stay here one day at a time for the time that I've been here that are very important to me, that have changed me from changed my behavior, not necessarily changed me, because I still think I'm that same taker, that same selfish, self-centered brat who wants what he wants when he wants it and get out of my way because I will take it. That I am that same person, but my behaviors, my actions have changed. Those actions have allowed me to become finally a giver. They've allowed me to come into rooms like this and have allowed me to go out in my life and have moments where I give. And trust me, they are moments. There is no doubt about it. You know, and hopefully, if you see some of the people in this room and you watch what they do and you listen to what they say and then you watch what they do and they do what they say and they're consistent and they show up and they do the little dirty jobs like setting up the chair. Who set the chairs up? Has anybody asked themselves that? Who set the chairs up? Who puts the chairs away? Who dumps the trash? We used to have to clean ashtrays and wash coffee cups. Remember that, Larry? That was messy. Ugh. But there are bathrooms to be cleaned. We still have bathrooms to clean. Who cleans the bathrooms? Those are the little anonymous jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous that when I got here and you told me, my sponsor told me to go do those things, I went, don't you know who I am? Yeah, you know, he knew. Loser! And then I said, well, what in the heck does that have to do with me staying sober? He goes, you don't know anything. Sit down, shut up, just do what I tell you to do. Jimmy Taylor was full of love, but he really didn't care how I felt, and he really didn't want to know what I thought. He really didn't want to know what I thought. In fact, he used to talk about my fourth step. Well, you know, it was long. And he used to describe me as being the most irritating newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I just think I'm just the most irritating. But you know, he just wanted to know what I did. You know, he would do little stupid things like tell me, I want you to go do something nice over for somebody. Okay. Can I tell anybody? No. Can I tell you? Definitely not. You can tell me that you did it, but you can't tell me what you did or who you did it for. Because then you're looking for credit. You know, and I am sober today by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and by virtue of the fact that I've been able to do and follow a few simple rules. Yeah, we have rules. We have rules. We have things that we have to do in order to stay sober. I have things that I have to do in order to stay sober, because I'm that kind of alcoholic who can't stay sober on his own. I need this program in order to be sober. And if I don't do the things that are done, that we're told to do in this program, then I'm going to drink again. I'm absolutely convinced of that, because I did it. Now, as I said, my sobriety date is January 31st of 1985. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. He's actively sponsored. I'm actively sponsored, and I actively sponsor other men. I have a home group, Cedar Street Men's, meets on Sunday morning, 9 o'clock. If you want a seat, you better get there at 7:15, because we line up in front of 30th and Cedar Street, Pathfinders Recovery Home, in order to get seats. And it's a good meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes there's guys there who like to think it's a meeting of Pathfinders, but you know, most of the time it's a good meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And those are things that keep me grounded. You know, I'm in a sponsorship line right now, or a sponsorship group, where my sponsor has twice as many years of sobriety as I do. His sponsor has more than twice as many years of sobriety as I do. And there are a dozen men who have more time than I do. And you know what? I am really glad to be right in the middle. Because with the alcoholic of my type, with my ego and my arrogance, if you start letting me think that like I'm at the top of the heap, I'll take it. Because that's where my head goes. That's just how sick I am. So, a little bit about my drinking. You know, I didn't know, I don't know about your stories. My story is that the first time I drank, I overshot the mark. It was at a wedding, sister of my best friend, and my best friend and I got to the bar. I was 13, he was 12, and we were two-fisted drinkers right from the start. Double gin and tonics, right out of the chute. Had my first blackout. Came to, had two more, had my second blackout. You know, because alcohol did something for me that was indescribable. It just took me places in my head that I needed to be. You know, it brought that instant relief. My second drink? Yeah, it wasn't as pretty. I passed out and did some other things that required mops and towels and things like that. You know, and so then, being the keen alcoholic I am, and having, and I like telling this story, I have an alcoholic uncle who died of this illness. He was found after a week in a Skid Row hotel in Philadelphia. And he was diabetic, and you know, he drank, passed out, and didn't take his insulin. So he, you know, you die, all right? Well, he was my image of what an alcoholic was. And so I had a little bit of experience with overshooting the mark and maybe having, well, you know, my uncle used to drink too much and pass out and do all those things and get messy, and they, you know, he would steal the money from the women's purses at holidays and disappear and be found, you know, in the alleys or wherever, or the park in my hometown. And I got my first brilliant idea. I'll just smoke dope. Now, see, I have a problem. I have a spiritual malady. Now, my first solution to my spiritual malady was the spirit of alcohol. But the book tells me that if I don't get a spiritual solution to my spiritual malady, I will drink again. And 5 short years later, I began drinking again. I was away at college, you know, mom wasn't looking. It was just real easy. I moved 3,000 miles across the country just to make sure. And, you know, the party was on. And from the age of 19 until I walked into Alvarado Parkway Institute on May 28th of 1984, that's my first sobriety date, I didn't draw a sober breath. I did not draw a sober breath. I was loaded, intoxicated, inebriated, affected from the head up by some substance at every moment of the day, even when I was sleeping. Because, you know, passing out doesn't qualify as going to bed sober. And, you know, my alcoholism took me into the depths of a little social heroin and cocaine. And the fact of the matter was, though, yeah, it's kind of hard to do heroin and cocaine socially. But I want you to know I managed to do it. But at the same time, alcohol was always my best friend. And when I went into those rooms of Alvarado Parkway Institute on May 28th of 1984, I did not go in there with the idea that I was going to get sober, that I was going to quit drinking, or that I was even going to quit drugging. I was going to clean up my little problem with social heroin and cocaine. And then I was going to smoke dope and, you know, drink Jack Daniels and beer and whiskey and, you know, and just go back to being that moderate, temperate drinker that I wasn't. See, I'm a pickle. I'm never going to be a cucumber again. And when I went into that place to get separated from alcohol, you know, and it talks about it in the big book. You know, that hospitalization is sometimes necessary in order to separate ourselves physically from alcohol. So don't let the prima donnas in Alcoholics Anonymous tell you that you can't go to a treatment facility or you can't go to detox or that you have to get sober the old-fashioned way. Because the old-fashioned way is a treatment center. Bill was in a half a dozen of them. Those are the facts. Evie, I don't know how many times Evie was in a treatment facility. And Roland Hazard, our famous friend who saw Dr. Young, He spent a year with Dr. Young. Now, how many treatment facilities do you know? They're called recovery homes now, you know, to get physically separated from alcohol. So whatever it takes for you to get physically separated from alcohol, don't let the prima donnas tell you that, you know, that you don't belong here, or that they're better than you are. Because it's just not the facts. So anyway, I go into that place, and I'm already planning my next drink. I got my next drink planned. But see, I have an ego. And I recognize that all you people, I come in here and the fog clears and you're all really wonderful people and you make me feel welcome and you do pat me on the back and you give me little jobs to do and you make me feel a part of. And I go, geez, this is really nice. I'm a guy who was always kind of a fifth wheel. You know, the guy in the car, you know, where there's two guys, two girls. I'm the fifth guy. I'm the third guy. With no girl, right? I'm that guy. So I never feel like I really belong anywhere. And so I go, you know what? I could do this Alcoholics Anonymous thing. This is pretty cool, you know? And I make a decision that I'm going to stay sober and I'm going to work the steps and I'm going to do all those things. And I'm going to have a career. I'm going to have a family. I'm going to, you know, have a house and kids and, you know, play Little League with my boys or girls, whatever the case may be. Have all those accoutrements of normal living. And then when I retire, I'm going to put on my slippers. I'm going to sit on my porch. And I'm going to drink with impunity. Because then who am I hurting? I already planned my next drink. God had other ideas. He usually does. And what happened to me is that I'll tell you, the deal was, is that I did not concede to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. I thought that I could somehow, some way beat the game. I had a nickname in college, Schemer. I always had an angle. Could always beat the game. I cheated my way through classes. I stole whenever I could. I didn't pay the IRS money that they were owed. That was the way I lived. I was a taker. And you could not get in my way. And I thought that I could beat this game called alcoholism. So I never took step one. So I want to share something with you. You cannot do 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 without one. There are promises in the book. My present sponsor talks about this all the time. There are promises in that book that occur at different stages of taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says if those promises do not happen for you, there are two reasons. One, you're non-alcoholic and you don't need to be here. Two, you missed something in an earlier step, dummy. So the fact of the matter was is that I did not have that spiritual awakening that occurs in step 12. And the day came without having had that spiritual awakening that I could not drink. Now, ergo, my current sobriety date. Now, the good news for me, and your story was great. I'm so glad that it was you who went out for 7 or 8 or 9 years or whatever it was, not me. I was extremely lucky. I got my butt kicked very quickly because what happened is that my best friend stopped doing the job. I drank. Did not happen. My head would not shut up. The relief did not come. My solution no longer worked. And I had hit a bottom because then I knew deep down inside of myself that the jig was up. That there was no way I was ever going to control and enjoy my drinking. You know, I don't know about any of you, but as long as it was fun, I didn't care if I didn't have control. Does anybody relate to that? Who cares, right? We're having fun. You know, that's the bottom line. And that idea was smashed. Thank God. God knew exactly what I needed. And I was able to come back to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that, at the time, tragedy, because I had 8 months of sobriety, don't you know? And I was sponsoring people, and I was a big shot. I was secretary of a meeting, and, I mean, geez. You know, the ego is an amazing maze. It's amazing. Just amazing. But the point was is that I got to come back and I got to be humble. And I got to get involved in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got to see what this program is really all about. And what this program is really all about is me acting better than I want to. It's me acting better than I feel. And it's me coming in, sitting in the chair. And even though I want to make a snide comment because the person at the podium is really stupid, I don't. I go to the bathroom before the meeting starts so I don't have to get up in the middle of the meeting. You know? I sit generally at the meetings I go to in the same seat every week. That's where you'll find me, unless I'm out of town, or unless, like tonight, I'm here instead of being at my regular Saturday night meeting. So that when a person walks in the room, they go, "That guy again?" See, there's some benefit that, you know, we don't understand that newcomers are really pretty darn smart. You know, they're looking to figure out a way that we're wrong. They don't want to be here. They really don't. I didn't want to. I mean, you know? And so they're looking for ways. They're looking for ways to walk out the door. And my sponsor has ingrained in me that I have a responsibility to make sure that, at least for me, that that newcomer doesn't look at me and go, "I'm going to walk out that door," because that guy is not an example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I don't know about you, but I never wanted to grow up. I wanted a free lunch. I still want a free lunch. I still don't want to grow up. But this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's funny. You can't be here and not grow up. You can't do the things that we do and not grow up. Well, you can't be alcoholic and be here and do the things that we do and not grow up. If you're non-alcoholic, you may not grow up. And if you don't do the things that we do, you might not grow up. Those are bitter truths. You know, you're going to have to, you know, I've never been without a sponsor. As I said, Jimmy was my sponsor for 18 years. And then I had the privilege of being sponsored by Peter Fleischman, who, had I not gone out, we would have been 8 days apart in sobriety. He would have been he'd have been 8 days ahead of me. But you know something, it really didn't matter because he was my friend before he was my sponsor. And I had the privilege of going to him and saying, "You know, Peter, I want to become more effective at carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think you're the person who's going to be able to teach me how to do that." And so he said, "Okay, but first you have to go to Jimmy. And you have to make that right. You have to thank him for everything he's done for you. And you have to honor him. And you have to tell him that you will always be his friend. And you have to be there for him and do things for him. You don't get to walk away and just ignore him. And I went and I made that right, and I did those things in those years that came. Some of you know Peter died in April of last year. You know? And now I have a new sponsor. That sponsor, thank God, he appointed himself as my sponsor. Because remember what I said? I got an idea. And the thing was, is that man made that decision for me at a time when I was probably not really capable of making that decision for myself. You know, it's losing a sponsor is a tough thing to do. And if anybody in this room has lost a sponsor, get my name and number after the meeting anyway. But, you know, it's a tough thing to go through. It really is. Because you feel like a fish out of water. I'm going to tell you a couple stories, then I'm going to shut up. When I was young, I didn't say short, but when I was young, I had my own personal piggy bank. And that personal piggy bank were the poor boxes in the churches in my hometown on the East Coast. And this was back in the day when the churches were still unlocked 24/7. And those boxes did not have locks on them. Well, wait, the Catholics had armed guards. But the Protestants, they were more trusting. And that was my own personal piggy bank. You know, and like I said, I'm a liar, cheat, and thief, and I'm lazy, and I want a free lunch. So that was my free lunch. Well, you know, I grow up, and I move away, and I have a family. I have a couple of sons. And about 10 years ago, I had the distinct privilege of taking my sons with me on a trip back to my hometown to show them where I lived and where I grew up and all that sort of thing, right? And I didn't tell them we were going to do this, but I said, boys, we have to make a couple of stops. And there were a couple of there were two churches in particular that I victimized. And we walked in, and I had called ahead and made arrangements and made appointments with the rectors of these two churches. And I got to make amends for stealing that money. I got to give them their money back. God's money. My bride. I told you, Larry, she's much more spiritual than I am. With my boys in the room. And they got to see their dad be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous clean up his mess. That chokes me up today, gives me goosebumps today. Those are that type of experience is what this program has become, and it just is the epitome of what this program is about and why I am here. Getting to do those things, getting to clean that slate, getting to right those wrongs, and doing it in a way that maybe, show somebody else what it is to be an honorable, honest adult with some integrity is all about. And if you stay here and you do these steps, no matter how far down the scale, no matter how far down the scale you have gone, you will have those same opportunities. I want to close with this. I'm going to give him credit one more time, and then I'm going to use it as my own. My good friend Rob describes sobriety like this. He says it's a priceless gift. I don't deserve it. I couldn't have paid for it. And I certainly didn't earn it. It's a gift from a God who I was afraid of, who I didn't trust, but who I trust today in a way just completely. No matter what happens in my life today, no matter what happens in my life today, I know that God's going to take care of me. And what that means for me is that means I can walk through anything. I can walk through death of people close to me. I can walk through losing stuff. I can walk through being alone. I can walk through having tragedy in my family and heartbreak in my family. And I know God's going to take care of me. Because it's the measure of me is no longer any of those outside things. The measure of me today is what's inside of here. And the feeling of being able to walk around and know that God is always walking with me. And if you've always felt a little empty inside and a little alone and a little scared and maybe covered it up with a little anger and a little rage, or maybe just more fear, I want to welcome you to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Please stay. Thank you.